Hey, the Shilling Show continues here. It is a Tuesday edition of the program. It's always my pleasure to welcome David Murata, the president of Murata Wealth Management. He's online at muratonmoney.com, and you can also sign up to get his terrific newsletters and information. Today, it's tax preparation to tax planning. We've got lots to talk about. David Murata, welcome back to the Shilling Show.
Yeah, thank you.
Oops, here we go. There we go. Okay. I gotcha.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Okay. It's kind of a painful discussion to have. You know, we just had a big tax bill that we had to pay, and it just, you know, I suppose I'm thankful that I'm earning money and I can pay taxes. I mean, I'd hate to not be earning any money and not owe taxes, but this whole system is just painful even to go through, as I was opining earlier, just to step through the process is absolutely repulsive to me.
It is an amazingly convoluted system whereby, you know, you're filling out all of these forms and there's calculations going on in the background. If you use tax software, mm-hmm. there's calculations going on in the background that you don't even know anything about, and it's computing this against that and running all kinds of different scenarios to try to make sure that they can gouge you for as much as possible. That's basically the purpose of the tax code. And where there are provisions in the tax code, quite often they're provisions based on, you know, political interests.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a grand game. I was thinking earlier that it's a very complex system, and with great complexity comes great opportunity. It's sort of like if you don't understand the tax code or you don't do any planning for the tax code, it's like playing chess without knowing you can take a pawn en passant or you can castle your king. You know, there are these strange rules. So mm-hmm. you get to move two pieces so long as it's the king and the rook, and the king hasn't moved and the rook hasn't moved. And you get to take a pawn by moving your pawn to a square where the pawn isn't even there. You know, it's crazy rules.
I didn't know that rule.
It's crazy rules. You know, and every sport has its crazy rules. You know, soccer has offsides and hockey has the blue line, you know, rule. And football has a whole stadium of rules. And
yes.
So it's amazing, you know, how many rules there are. But with all those rules, you need to understand them to be able to play the game properly. And playing the game properly is really trying to minimize your lifetime of tax. And while tax preparation is very important and the, you know, the CPAs that do their job, it's a very important job. Most of the time, what they're trying to do is to fill out the forms correctly such that you get all your deductions you can get for what you did last year. But they're not really looking at what you can do this year to make the numbers different, and what you can do the year after that and the year after that and the year after that. And what we do at our firm is we take a client's tax situation, we try to model it from now until age 100.
Mm.
So we try to look at everything that they're going to pay in taxes, and it's not easy to do that. You can't do it on the back of a napkin. You can't do it in your head. You actually have to model it. And most taxpayers really underestimate the long-term erosion simply being taxed on investments or things that go up by inflation. So they're really getting taxed on inflation. All the capital gains taxes is part inflation and part actual gain. And they also underestimate the rising cost of required minimum distributions,
mm-hmm.
Especially when they're working and they're just throwing money into their retirement account. You know, and pretty soon they get $800,000 in their retirement account and they think, okay, that's a good amount. And then what they don't realize is that between their current age, which might be 50, and when they're going to have to start taking required minimum distributions at 70, that $800,000 could double and double again. And all of a sudden, they've got a lot of money in a retirement account. And then the required minimum distributions don't peak until your late 80s and early 90s. Mm-hmm. And so you could find yourself in later in life in a higher tax bracket than you were at your maximum working career. And that's very frustrating because that's a point at which the required minimum distributions and their Social Security, and you may even have a pension on top of that, and you may find yourself getting taxed again much more at a very high rate.
You know, this whole thing is remarkable, and you called it a game. And so the government is trying to game you to get the most money out of you. But on the other side, individuals and corporations and businesses are trying to do exactly the opposite, as well they should. And yet we have people in this country who are attacking not only corporations, which you've heard, but also individuals, the president, for example, but others, who try to minimize their tax bill, as if there was something inherently wrong with that. I look at this and say, bravo to you if you keep more of your own money. Do everything that you can legally to do that.
It is. And if you think of it as a complex set of rules, that whatever you, as long as you're abiding by the rules, there's really no morality to the tax code.
Mm-hmm.
Just like there's no morality to castling or en passant in chess or the offsides rule in soccer. You could change the offsides rule in soccer and you get a different game. It might be a cleaner game. It might not. You could send soccer players when they make a foul, you could send them to a penalty box like they do in hockey.
Mm-hmm.
All you have is a different game, and you're trying to make sure that the game is simple and fair and is a good one to do, and it accomplishes its goals. The problem with the tax code is that the tax code changes behavior, and it changes behavior on our gross national product and everyone's livelihood and everyone's welfare. And so those kinds of changes, you have to be very careful about the unintended consequences.
So let's talk about that. And I referenced earlier that, you know, there's a charitable deduction and a home mortgage deduction and probably some other ones that are way up there at the top of people's sacred cow list. But I'd be willing to throw all that away just to simplify the system. I'm so fed up with all of this game playing. And I wanted to ask you, I mean, if we did that, if we just came through, let's just say that the president came out and said, I'm doing a 12% flat tax for everybody. We're getting rid of all deductions, period. What happens to the economy? Can he do? Could that actually happen over the course of, say, a two-year transition?
It could. You could move to a flat tax, and there would be winners and losers. There's no doubt about it. Or if they made it too high or too low, there could be all winners and all losers. but for the most part, there would be winners and losers, and the incentives would be different. And I'm sure that the people who lost on that tax code would complain bitterly. But if you make better incentives, then that would be good. So, for example, right now we tax income, so you're going to get less income because you tax it.
Mm.
A lot of Americans don't realize we had to pass a constitutional amendment to get an income tax. It was illegal up until passing the constitutional amendment.
This is the 16th Amendment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, we're coming, the 100th anniversary of the 16th Amendment, and we've now had 100 years of taxation. You know, originally it was only a tax on the uber rich, and it was limited to, you know, a 0.5% or something crazy like that. You know, and now we're taking, 33% of the gross domestic product in taxes, and that has a very debilitating effect. Whatever you tax, you get less of. And so if you want to get less productivity in the United States, tax productivity. If you want to get less spending in the United States, you tax spending. And so, you know, if you want to get less land ownership, you'll tax land. Whatever it is you want to tax, you'll get less of it. And so there are tax codes in the sense that would have a better effect. I'm not going to say they have better morality to mm-hmm. them, but they would have a better effect in terms of discouraging what you'd like to discourage and encouraging what you'd like to encourage. We tax savings and investment, so we have less savings and investment as a result. So that's why a lot of people think that the fairest tax you could do is probably a consumption tax.
Mm-hmm.
And that way the rich only get taxed if they try to live rich.
Mm.
If they live frugally, they wouldn't get taxed.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people say that's not fair because they would take all their money and they would store it. But the rich storing money is how you get capital in this country to do things. And so that's actually a very good effect. The rich can't do anything with their investments other than capital investments, and capital investments are always good for the economy because now you own businesses and you're running businesses. And every business has to pay its vendors and its employees before there's any profit left over.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually have to do a lot of good, and then maybe you'll make it and you'll get some profit in return.
We're talking with David Murata, Murata Wealth Management, tax preparation and tax planning. We'll have some tips on the other side for tax planning. You know, it's interesting to me to think about all of this, and particularly researching the concept of progressive taxation, which encourages whoever is right under the line to vote to tax the hell out of the people that are over the top of the line because they're not paying anything. And hey, if we can get more money from those other guys, if everybody gets hit evenly, if everybody gets hit the same when taxes go up, everybody's going to scream, or at least most rational people will.
It would seem to be much more fair.
Yeah. All right. 977-1070 is the phone number. The Shilling Show continues here on a Tuesday edition with David Murata. Ellie stands by. Your calls, questions, comments, 977-1070.
How could we know when I was young? All the changes that were to come. Yeah.
Shilling Show continues, a Tuesday edition. David Morata is our guest from Morata Wealth Management. He's online at moradaonmoney.com. We're talking about tax preparation and tax planning. And so let's go to some of the tax planning ideas so we don't miss these, because they're all very important for people to consider. And let's hit off number one, which is actually deduction on your state tax returns.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know, but any kind of interest which is paid from U.S. debt obligations can be deducted on your Virginia taxes. It's not a big deduction, mm-hmm. but if it's hard to get to. And so we have the information because we know every dividend paid by every mutual fund or exchange-traded fund in an account. So we collect it up and we send it to the tax preparers. The tax preparers don't really have that information, but it's as simple as filling it out on a line. And every fund has a percentage of their interest paid. So you add up all their interest, you multiply it times some percent, like 70% of this came from government obligations, and mm-hmm. then you can deduct that. Very small deduction, but at least you can look for it and you can know how to get at it, and it's a little bit easier.
The next one has to do with health savings accounts. Now, I have a health savings account. I couldn't fund it this year because Obamacare basically killed my policy, but I still have money in there and I'm still enjoying it. I'm hoping that someday they will change the law to not only expand it, but to allow the use of health savings accounts with MediShare or Health Sharing Ministries, which is what my family has.
Yeah, health savings accounts, you should fully fund them because you put the money in and you get a tax deduction. And when you take the money out, you don't have to pay taxes if it's used for health care. So it can be used even in retirement to pay Medicare premiums. Mm-hmm. It can be used to self-insure for long-term care insurance. And if you do ever want to take it out, once you've gotten old enough, you can take it out and just pay tax on it like you would an IRA.
So is that taxed at the current level?
Yeah, it's taxed at your current level of income. So it's like an IRA, except it has no required minimum distributions, and you can get deductions out that are tax-free so long as it's used for health care expenses.
And the other nice thing about an HSA is it has driven me to be a very careful consumer. In other words, previously, the insurance is paying for it. Who cares what it costs? I'll tell you what. I one time went to the doctor and had some tests, and they sent them over to UVA, and it was like three or four times as much as it was previously when I had it done somewhere else. I'm like, okay, I'm never going to do this again without asking where you're sending it and what it's going to cost. So we all of a sudden become conscious of that.
Yeah, if liberals only knew the power of the person who's paying for it being the person who decides about it, that is the power of not going through a single payer where that single payer is not the individual. The individual is so much more cost conscious. So I always ask about what something is going to cost, and I'm willing to shop around at whatever I'm doing because I know it's going to be my out-of-pocket for my health savings account.
Absolutely. Okay, so we have Roth IRAs, and we have options here actually for present and future year.
Yeah, getting as much money into a Roth IRA as possible has an incredible long-term savings effect. We continue to model client after client where the savings effect is in the hundreds of thousands of dollars because you're not in a Roth. If you can think about the inflation between now and 50 years ago, that's an incredible amount of inflation. In fact, is a tremendous tax burden if that's in a taxable account. A lot of people don't want to fund Roths because if you fund a Roth, then you have to pay more taxes because you don't get the deduction. And if you do a Roth conversion, you have to pay taxes on the conversion. What most people don't realize is paying the tax is actually where the savings is, because you get to take money, which is a portion of it is the government's in an IRA. Mm-hmm. And when you move it over to a Roth, you get the government's portion and you give up your taxable portion. Mm. And by giving up the taxable portion, you don't get taxed on the inflation in that taxable account over and over again in capital gains, and you don't get taxed on the future tax rates, which hopefully they'll go down this year, but they seem to go up many years, mm-hmm. and so it's difficult to do that. At any rate, putting money into a Roth is like putting money into the frictionless vacuum we all learned about in physics. Things just slide easier in a frictionless vacuum. So you can fund your 2016 Roth. You still have till April 18th this year to fund your 2016 Roth. It's $5,500 per person, or $6,500 if you're over 50. Mm-hmm. And you can go ahead and fund your 2017 Roth, which is another $5,500 or $6,500 if you're over 50. If you imagine a couple that's under 50, they could do $22,000 between them. 11,000 for last year and 11,000 for this year. It's a tremendous amount of money that you can store in a place where it will never get taxed again. If you have a money in a bank account, you should take the money out of the bank account and go fund your Roth, because you can always take it back out of the Roth anytime you want. Whatever you put in, you can take back out. So rather than storing your money in a bank account where you're going to have to pay interest on or taxes on all the interest and dividends, you might as well store it in a Roth where it won't be taxed. And so then all the growth will stay in the Roth, and you can take your money back out at any time you want. So even if you can't afford it, you should still fund your Roth if you have any scrap of savings in your bank account or your taxable account.
We've talked a lot about inflation today, David, and I'm going to ask you a theoretical question. Should all taxes be indexed for inflation? Would that be the right thing to do?
They should. They've indexed the tax brackets for inflation. The problem is that the government plays with inflation numbers, and sometimes official inflation is not actually what real inflation is. And so there are some problems there. But if you do all taxes as a flat percent, you don't even have to index it for inflation, because then
it just floats.
It just floats, right? Exactly what it is. And so that's a little bit easier. And I think we've talked about this earlier on the show. Capital gains really shouldn't be taxed at all. First, because it's mostly inflation, and second, because it's simply a capital gain on something that you have. It's not actually income. But most of the time, rich people, when you look at their taxes and they say they didn't pay very much in tax, it's because you're including things in their income that shouldn't be taxed at all, like capital gains. And so the correct capital gains tax from an economic perspective is zero, because of the unintended consequences when you try to tax capital gains. You should really tax something else, and we should get our tax from a more simplified methodology.
Let's go to the phones. 977-1070 is the phone number. Comments, questions for David Murata, we'd love to hear from you. Ellie stands by at 977-1070, and we say hello to Greg. Hi, Greg.
Well, hello, guys. Just real quickly, you know, a person in business is punished. He's got to pay taxes on his tools, on everything he's got to operate a business. And then you got just the whole matrix of insanity in our system. And then you go to Tom Garrett's town hall, and you got all these long-haired, greasy-looking people pulling out pots and beating on it, demanding that we give them money that we worked hard for. I don't understand it. Until you get rid of that mentality in this country, you're going to always have a situation by where the doers, the people who try, are going to be punished for doing, and then those who want to receive sit around in coffee houses and beating on pots and chanting. I mean, how can you fight that? And I would think the only way to turn it around is to educate our children when they're young and show them that there's consequence for not getting up and going to work. And if you don't work, you don't eat. And I'll just sign up and get y'all's comments on that.
Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, Greg has encapsulated the battle of people who want to spend other people's money and people who think it's a virtue to vote for you to give more money to their favorite charity.
Right.
that is not a virtue. That is actually, I think, a terrible sin for you to burden someone else with what you want money spent on. I heard a great quote about where people are young people are going, especially in Europe and elsewhere. To try to find the places that that have the best economic situation, and the quote was that money flows where it's well treated.
That's interesting. So where would that be? Someplace like Hong Kong?
Interestingly enough, Hong Kong's a great place. In terms of the Middle East, Dubai has some interesting policies. You can't live there unless you're employed.
I like that,
and that's an interesting concept. You need to be producing something. And in terms of the Middle East, Dubai has some better rules than elsewhere. But you're right; the economic freedom of some countries is just so much better than others. Maybe we can do another show on it. But the United States has continued to drop in economic freedom from its height in 2010 or 2008. Even was probably its height in 2010. We dropped out of the free category and into the mostly free category. We're now down in the middle of the mostly free category. We used to be up at the top, and so we've continued to drop. We're just in our firm, we're just reevaluating all of the countries that we invest in, and the United States is still a good country to invest in. We're still freer than much of the world. But for example, Great Britain has passed us and is now actually a lot freer than us. And
wow.
With Brexit, Great Britain will probably continue to do better post-Brexit than they would when they were entangled in the European Union. But yes, there's a lot of countries that are freer, including Hong Kong, Singapore, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, Switzerland, that are all in the top of the free category.
There was a news story within the past month or so, and I didn't follow up on it, but I heard there was a country, it may have been a European, maybe an Eastern European country, that was taxing the gainfully unemployed. In other words, if you were able-bodied and you were not working, you were going to get taxed for that. And it really, it kind of goes back to this whole concept of taxing what you want less of. And here, obviously, it's the opposite. We're just giving people public money and taxing the productive people and handing it out to people who are well able to work and choose not to.
I know it sounds crazy, but a tax on the poor would produce less poor. Mm-hmm. Because there are people right now who cannot earn more money, because if they earn more money, they'll lose too many of the goodies that they're getting from the government. And there are tax rates at which $1 is taxed at hundreds of dollars because you've pushed yourself into the next highest Medicaid bracket or mm-hmm. Medicare bracket, or you've gotten off Medicaid, or you've lost your food stamps or something like that. And staying below those poverty limits is very important for people on the border of the poverty line. Or four times the poverty line is another important border where it's really difficult to cross. The most fair tax, because we all share equally in this country and we all get one vote, would be a head tax, meaning that you just tax everyone equally. That's sometimes called a poll tax.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fairest tax you could have. The second fairest tax you could have would be a consumption tax, I think, because that way the more you spend and the more you try to live rich, the more we're going to discourage that, mm-hmm. because y'all pay your fair share. But a flat tax of a consumption tax would be the kind of the best of all consumption tax, and that wouldn't discourage more spending. Every spending would have the same marginal tax rate, so if you could make money by spending money, you'd go ahead and do it.
977-1070 is the phone number. Our final segment with David Morata is coming right up. We're talking about tax preparation to tax planning, and we'll wrap this conversation up right after this.
I remember when I was a lad, times were hard and things were bad, but there's a silver lining behind every cloud.
We continue here our final segment with David Morata, online at moradaonmoney.com, tax preparation to tax planning. Okay, so what about people who are over the income limits, and what can they do regarding Roths or something like that? Is there an option for them?
Yeah, there's an interesting technique. Again, it's like en passant while castling. It's very complex, mm-hmm. but the tax code allows somebody who can't contribute to a Roth directly, if they have most of their money in a 401k, they can do what's called a backdoor Roth, where you contribute an after-tax portion to an IRA, and since you've already paid tax on it, you immediately convert that IRA to a Roth, and you've already paid tax. So you can contribute to a Roth even when the government doesn't let you contribute to a Roth by just doing it in two steps instead of one. And if people think that that's crazy or should be illegal, well, you should vote all the fools out of office who make all that stuff. But it is legal, and so it's all part of the rules. And so we call it a backdoor Roth, and it's pretty easy to do and pretty straightforward.
There's this whole issue of SEP IRA, which some people don't know what that is, but it's for self-employed.
Yeah, especially like if you're working at the university and you're contributing to – by the way, people who work at the university can contribute to a 403B and a 457 account, which is like a double 401k, that you can, mm-hmm. and you can get that into a Roth. It's amazing how much money at the University of Virginia that you can actually put into a Roth account. Then you can fund your Roth for another $5,500 for you and your spouse, and then you can fund a SEP IRA, which is for 25% of any outside consulting business that you have. And so university professors have so many different options to store money away, mm-hmm. and it's very important for them because otherwise they're usually contributing too much to their traditional accounts.
How about land preservation tax credits? I know we've had a conversation about this a couple years ago, or something else, the Neighborhood Assistance Program, a charity that fits under that.
Yeah, most people don't know, but land preservation credits are credits that someone gets because they put their land into a preserve and given up the development rights. They get credits for that, and they can sell those credits, and they're Virginia tax credits. You can buy those Virginia tax credits. I've seen them as low as like 80 cents. Mm-hmm. So you can pay your Virginia tax bill for 80 cents on the dollar by buying credits. So you save a 20% savings of your Virginia tax bill. If you're a small business owner and your Virginia tax bill is $50,000, that's worth $10,000 mm-hmm. if you can pay the bill 80 cents on the dollar. And you know, I'm amazed at the number of different ways that the tax code can be manipulated and the rules can be manipulated to save $10,000 here, $10,000 here. You know, after a while, it adds up to real money.
It does. I'm so conflicted over that because I understand the purpose behind it, but this whole idea of taking land off the taxable rolls just increases everybody else's tax. They're going to get it one way or the other.
Yeah, and the neighborhood assistance program is you can support charities which support the poor. Basically, mm-hmm. is the rule. And if you negotiate with the charity, you can get neighborhood assistance program credits. That's another amazing benefit that you can get. You can give, I'm going to pull out a number, you can give $10,000 to a charity. You get $6,500 of Virginia tax credit, so it's worth $6,500. You get, if you give appreciated stock, you can save 15% of the appreciated stock's capital gains that you'd mm-hmm. normally own. And you also still get the federal tax deduction at your tax bracket. I have worked it out, and there are people who are in the upper income tax brackets that if they give money to the neighborhood assistance program and mm-hmm. they get neighborhood assistance program credits for it, they will actually make money by giving money away because they'll get more goodies in tax returns than it will cost them to give the gift away in the first place. And the number of charities that are involved in neighborhood assistance program credits are like 2,500. So, you know, everything from Meals on Wheels to Habitat for Humanity to 1,000 other different charities, Soho Institute, they're all there, and you can pick your favorite charity and actually do that and make money off your taxes.
Pretty remarkable. We've got just about a minute left. So where does all this go from here? It kind of sounds like we're going to be stuck with this for a while, even if there is some tax change, that we're still going to have a lot of the complexity.
You know, the Trump tax proposals were a move in the right direction, but they were a very small move in the right direction. They made things simpler. They made things less burdensome. They reduced the number of brackets. They were all moves in the right direction, but they were still leaving the bulk of the tax code complexity intact. I would say that for most people, most of the clients who come to us and say, I have a very simple tax return, I don't think there's any savings you can find. And then we start looking at things and we get a little bit here and a little bit there. Very small amounts of savings over long periods of time mm-hmm. add up to hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I would say that the more people understand the tax code, two things. One, the better that they will be at tax planning, and the madder they will be at the government. And those are both two very good things.
They are good. David Morata is online at moradaonmoney.com. A great conversation. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right.